Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for July 30th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, a federal appeals court has upheld new U.S. laws requiring labels on packaged steaks, ribs, and other cuts of meat to say where the animals were born, raised, and slaughtered. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on just how USDA collects corn and soybean numbers for its monthly reports. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter, September wheat, 617 up 5.5, December 632.25 up 4. Soft September wheat settled at 527.25 up 7.25, December 549.5 up 5.75. September corn settled at 361.75 up 0.25, December 371.5 up 0.5, March 15, 383.5 up 0.5, July 399.25 up 0.25. August soybeans settled at 1220.5 down 6. September 1102.25 down 19.25. November 1081.25 down 13.75. August soybean meal settled at 387.60 down 7.80. August soybean oil settled at 36.05 down 20. Last trades now over on the livestock side. August live cattle, 159.87.5 up 110. August feeders, 223.32.5 up 190. And August lean hogs at 118.80 are down 265. And those are today's settlements in Chicago.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that the theme to the two-week outlook has not changed since Tuesday, and the important rain event advertised for next week is still in the forecast. Some relief from dryness is expected in the driest areas from the southwestern Corn Belt into southern Illinois and into central Kentucky Tuesday into Friday of next week. Rain is not likely to be heavy, however, and stress to crops will likely quickly return without follow-up rain. Some scattered showers are possible in the days following the rain event, but coverage of significant rain will likely be too low to prevent the topsoil from quickly firming up again. If follow-up rain does not occur by the middle of the month, stress to crops, especially soybeans, and the driest areas mentioned could become more serious and yields could decline. Meanwhile, rain will increase Sunday into Monday in northern parts of the western Corn Belt and will spread across the remainder of the Midwest by Friday of next week. The rain will provide a timely boost in topsoil moisture and will help to ensure favorable conditions. A large part of the eastern Corn Belt will receive at least some rain in advance of next week's rain event, and that rain and the mild temperatures expected will help to perpetuate highly favorable conditions for crops. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the Fed came out of its two-day meeting over the lunchtime today, says it's going to scale back its purchases of mortgage and treasury bonds to $25 billion monthly. That keeps it on target to end that bond program by October. But the news to me out of the meeting was talk internally, they're not telling us, but talk internally, turning to the timing and mechanics of interest rate increases.
Well, that's just it. You know, I mean, we're already seeing the dollar respond, Dave. We hit six-month highs on the dollar this week, and what does that mean for us? Well, that could mean that we could see some front-loading of exports, you know, in anticipation of the timing of the end, as well as any kind of an increase in interest rates. Had an interesting discussion this morning with a banker, and he said, too, you know, they're watching that closely because they anticipate if the dollar starts to climb and if interest rates start to climb, probably, you know, we could see in the next 6 to 12 months maybe a decline in farmland values of 10 to 15% depending upon where you are.
And we have seen some of that front loading, especially in soybean meal.
And there's no question. And, you know, that's the same thing. You know, we've seen some pretty aggressive wheat buying now. We've seen aggressive bean buying for 2014-15 coming out of China, although China does have to buy a lot. And I think some of it is related to the fact that the dollar is climbing. And they, even though they look at the price right now, what they're paying today is less than they would if the dollar climbs even higher than where it is.
We also had word this morning from the Commerce Department that gross domestic product for the quarter, the second quarter, 4%. That's a number we haven't seen in a long time.
No, not in a long, long time. And in fact, it was better than the guesses. But I thought it'd be interesting, Dave, for people to know what the GDP formula actually is and what makes up that number. And it's private consumption. In other words, what are we spending? The sum of all government spending. I think that has much to do with the 4%. the business spending in the country on capital. In other words, you know, capital improvements to their businesses and that type of thing. And then net exports. So, you know, it's very scary. The number looks good, but let's dig into it and see where it really comes from. And when the majority of it is being supported by government spending, that is still a very scary number.
You know, we talked a little bit this morning about transportation issues, and we also look at the technical charts, and we keep wondering what will hold, what will catch for December corn, how low could it go? Is 350 good enough? Will it go down lower? Is 310, 312 in play? I think regardless of the number that you're looking at on the futures side, let's say you are looking at 350, 340, you're probably going to look at cash corn significantly lower than that because of transportation issues.
Well, there's no question. In fact, you know, and I have to ask myself, you know, I know that in some of the areas around here we're about 23 under on new crop. Could we widen another 20 or 30 cents? I certainly think it could happen. And you know, truck rates, you know, we'll be able to get semis, okay? But truck rates are going to go up. Why? Because they're going to be sitting in long, long lines. I mean, it takes, I can't remember what the conversion rate is between a rail car and trucks right at the moment, but it takes a lot of trucks to fill one rail car. And so, you know, it is a big concern, and I think it's something that guys just, you've got to be thinking about locking in some basis if you have some good basis opportunities right at this point in time. Decatur, I heard today, was out of corn again, you know, and it's related to rail is what it is. Mm-hmm. So this is not a good situation that's building.
You did some phoning with folks out in western Kansas and came up with some interesting numbers for production.
I think it's especially interesting for our listening audience. You know, when you look at, we don't think too much about it. We know that they're irrigated, but
right.
This fellow said this is pretty average out there. This is a banker I was talking with, and he was sitting down with a really good client who gave him these numbers, and he said, you know, to rent an acre of irrigated land is $200. To plant and grow it cost about $700, so that would be a $900 cost per acre. Mm-hmm. If you look at 370 futures, that means that they have to produce 243 bushels an acre just to break even out there. And at this, and that's without bases coming off. That's just straight futures. So, you know, at this point in time, they shoot to hope to get to 200. Doesn't sound real promising.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like some people might be taking some losses on the growing season, and unless they're very, very nimble and are able to maybe do something with options and re-own and sell the crop again down the road. Who's out and about? USDA's out and about, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yep, they started that survey. You know, last year they talked to 24,000 people, and you know, they'll be out there counting plants and ears on corn and plants and nodes on beans. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think, you know, the beans might not have as many nodes because we hear in some places, you know, the bean plant is shorter than what it normally would be. But it'll really be fun to find out what they come up with.
Do you think that USDA will take as big a swing at it as the trade seems to be thinking the crop is? They're over 170, 170.4. USDA is nowhere near that number.
Well, they're not, and on the August report, they don't change yield. But the thing they can change at any time would be harvested acres, and so, which would mean if they changed harvested acres, they could actually raise production and give us an implied yield, you know, from that standpoint. So it there too, it's going to be something. But you know, you look at crop condition ratings, Dave. You know, and last week we were at 75% good to excellent on corn. The average for 20 years is 63. And the worst we've ever had is 86, and that was in 1986. And 2 years later, we had 19 in 1988. So I think that that's amazing. And you just look at beans, too, 54%. The average is 53. So they're pretty close. But it's going to be interesting. When you look at, you know, the current, if you look at crop conditions, you know, we've got about 81.9% of all the acres in the U.S. at or above trend line and 84.7 on beans at or above trend line. So It's going to be a big question. I think the bigger question about that USDA report, Dave, is going to be, are we going to pick up again some more old crop, you know, carryout? We went to 1.246 billion. Are we going to go to 1.296, up another 50 million? I think it's very possible.
And I suppose as we're looking at that, those yield numbers and yield potentials, we'll have to see if the narrative begins to change at all because of cool weather conditions, especially in the northern tier.
Well, that's true. And when you look at the weather, this is going to be a year again like we saw in 2009. We're going to need to have an extended fall and a nice warm September, basically, I think, to be able to try and finish crops out up there. And if that doesn't come to fruition, well, then the trade, then we probably will find support at a higher level. But, you know, I think that we could see the lows in December corn, November beans by the time we get through September. Once we get past the September USDA report and that end of the month September report, I don't doubt that by then the trade's going to have so much built into it, it'll be what more news is going to really move us.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good day.
You too. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, a federal appeals court yesterday upheld new government rules requiring labels on packaged steaks, ribs, and other cuts of meat to say where the animals were born, raised, and slaughtered. In the opinion issued Tuesday, Judge Stephen F. Williams of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia wrote that the government's interest in country of origin labels is substantial. The lawsuit was led by the American Meat Institute, which represents the nation's largest meat packers, and joined by other meat industry groups. The meat industry argued that the paperwork behind the labels is burdensome, that it's not practical to keep cattle and hogs from other countries separate from domestic animals, and the labels provide no health benefit to consumers. The AMI did not say whether the industry will appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Japanese officials today say that live pigs imported into Japan from the U.S. and Canada will be subject to new certification requirements to prevent the spread of livestock disease. The new requirements are to combat the spread of PED virus, an infection in pigs that causes severe dehydration. Japan will require exporters to certify that their swine come from facilities in which there has been no clinical evidence of PEDV for at least 12 months. The exported pigs also must test negative for PEDV during their period of pre-export isolation and inspection. In June, the EU imposed its own PEDV testing requirements on imports from U.S. and Canadian hog farms. The Russian government agency overseeing food safety may ban U.S. chicken imports over salmonella concerns, citing contamination with the foodborne bacteria. The agency also is investigating foreign supplies of cheese to McDonald's restaurants in Russia, citing concerns over the presence of antibiotics. Officials in Russia are now conducting a risk assessment to determine the extent to which the U.S. domestic cases of salmonella pose a threat to Russia via imports. The risk assessment should take up to 3 days, and a ban, if approved, would be enforced within the following 2 to 3 weeks. Republican staff on the Senate Homeland Security Committee say the government is underestimating the threat of a chemical attack on America's densely populated cities and has failed to inspect virtually all of the chemical facilities that it considers especially vulnerable to terrorists. The report says that as of June 30th, DHS has failed to conduct security compliance inspections on 3,972 chemical facilities. Many facilities are chemical manufacturers. They also include farm supply retailers and fertilizer distribution warehouses. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA has begun collecting data for the August crop production report. Todd Gleason has more on how the agency goes about acquiring the data from corn and soybean farmers throughout the nation.
USDA started its data collection for the August crop production report at the end of July. The report is due Tuesday, the 12th day of August. It will estimate the size of the U.S. corn, soybean, and wheat crops. Lance Honig is chief of the crops branch for USDA NAS. He says the agency will take two types of surveys to gather the needed information.
One is a farmer-based reporting survey. We call it our Ag Yield Survey. We contact farmers across the country and ask them simply to tell us, what do you expect your yields to be? How many acres do you expect to harvest for the various crops? But in addition to that, at least for the corn, soybeans, cotton, and winter wheat, we also have a field-based survey where we actually send trained enumerators into selected fields across the country for those crops, where they can actually take counts and measurements. They'll actually count stalks, count ears, make various counts like that. And as the crop continues to mature throughout the season, eventually they'll be able to actually harvest portions of that crop so that we can send that off to our laboratory in St. Louis for further yield analysis.
The August crop production report sets up a collection system for all four reports dealing with the corn and soybeans. Mark Schleichner says the agency uses the same farmers and the same fields each time a report is released. He is the Illinois USDA NAS state statistician.
We've got a series of four crop production reports coming up, and it's important to us to go back to the same fields, and starting with August, then September, October, until harvest. And it's also important to us to go back to the same producers with our mailed questionnaires. For instance, if you were to look at a double crop soybean field now, it could be quite short and look kind of scraggly and not so much. But if we get some good rains over the next few weeks in August, that can really make a difference. And that field could turn from a scraggly looking poor field into a pretty good field.
Schleusner says the enumerators are already in the field and on the phone collecting data. He explains how many samples will be pulled in Illinois.
For the corn field samples. We're going to do a total of about 280, but we do half of them this month in August, about 140. And then we'll do all of them next month in September for soybeans. I believe it's 230, but again, we'll do in half of them now. So 115 in August and 230 in September. And for the paper questionnaire that we mail to people and for the follow-up phone calls that we make, that's about 1,000. It's 900 or 1,000 producers all around the state of Illinois.
USDA NASS will check in with each field and producer four times this season, beginning right now for the August USDA Crop Production Report. The other three reports are released in September, October, and November. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Tara Dinas of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Tara.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking. Let's begin with your eyeball account of what the crops look like over in Clymers area.
Certainly very good. We are in quite a good pocket here where we have had really ideal weather conditions so far. A little bit dry right now. We could certainly use another little bit of rain, but definitely projecting record yields for a majority of our draw.
Is most of the corn out of pollination into dough stage at this point or no?
Yeah, virtually everything is. I mean, it's tough to find a field around this immediate area that isn't pollinated. As you get further into the northwest pocket of Indiana, you'll find some that hasn't been, but virtually everything is in the dough stage around here.
So I imagine the question that is on everybody's mind is, with the big crop coming, what will bases look like come harvest time?
Yeah, certainly a big topic of conversation. We've actually seen quite a few people locking in basis values at the levels they're at today because there is the expectation that by the end of harvest, you know, values will certainly get significantly weaker. And that definitely is going to be the case at some point with as big of a crop as we have. The real challenge will be at the start of harvest here. A lot of folks wondering if there'll be any premiums or any moisture incentives, and certainly a lot of corn will go into the bins this year.
Do you think there's going to be some logistical issues surrounding getting this big crop put up? And I'm thinking of train transportation primarily.
Yeah, I mean, rail logistics are going to be very tough. There's going to be a lot of challenges for elevators to stay open if they can't get the wheels to get the grain moving. And as of now, I think that's definitely a big concern for everybody, and I think it will present challenges, maybe not at the immediate start of harvest, but once we get into the heart of this thing, and especially at the tail end, that's going to be a huge logistical challenge.
Is that going to widen up bases even further, or will futures be low enough, do you think, that it won't?
No, I think it definitely will widen basis even further, honestly. I mean, you know, if people are full and can't take it, they're going to have to, you know, drop the basis off in order to kind of continue to hold off on getting that grain in until they can handle it.
Okay, then why don't we go ahead and get your bids for today then?
Yeah, absolutely. Cash corn at Delphi today is 352, at Clymers is 355, and then cash beans at Delphi are 1241.
Thank you very much, Tara.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
You too. That's Tara Dinas of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Someone from Clymers joins us every Wednesday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. It's National Cheesecake Day. It's also St. Abdon's Day, patron of barrel makers. The Romans used barrels as early as the 3rd century AD. By the mid-20th century, barrels had largely lost their appeal, except for the aging of spirits, including wine and whiskey. On this day in agricultural history in 1739, Caspar Wiskar founded the first successful large-scale glass factory in the U.S. Much of his trade was with the production of wine bottles. In 1838, it supposedly rained frogs in London. In 1849, Jacob Perkins died. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression.
Perkins also produced the first nails, which were both cut and headed by machine in America. He also patented a hot air furnace. In 1898, cornflakes were invented by William Kellogg, 4 years after he and his brother John Harvey accidentally invented a flaked cereal process based on wheat. In 1906, the brothers founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company, which is known today as Kellogg's. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Most everybody in the U.S. Midwest will pick up on rain and a few thunderstorms at one time or another over the next 2 weeks, and sufficient amounts of rain will occur to help to support long-term crop development potentials. The forecast specifically states that an amount of heavy rain will be possible in the northern parts of the Midwest here late in this coming weekend and going into the first part of next week. This low-pressure center will have big influence on South Dakota, parts of North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and parts of Michigan. And as the low-pressure system moves across the entire upper parts of the Midwest, we'll see rain totals of a half to 1.5 and local totals over 2 inches possible, but the rains to the immediate south will not be nearly as impressive. Some locations will stay dry. Others will pick up on 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch of rain. The precipitation in those areas will occur mostly early to midweek next week. The same frontal boundary that produces that rain will likely become stationary, and a new low-pressure center will develop on the west end of the front. And that new low-pressure center, once it's in place over the weekend, will head off towards the northeast and work its way across a big part of the lower and eastern portions of the Midwest with another wave or two of rain expected. Rain totals during that period of time were 1.5 to 1.5 inches, local amounts over 2 inches, and that is when we'll see some of the southwestern Corn Belt areas getting some welcome rainfall. Now, the amount of moisture that occurs in some of these old, drier areas in Kansas, Missouri, southern Illinois, parts of the northern Delta, even Nebraska, southwestern Iowa, will be enough to temporarily lift the topsoil moisture situation, but we are going to have to come up with some additional follow-up precipitation as we move further out in time to help assure that we don't fall back into a drier biased mode. There's no ridge of high pressure being advertised across any part of the U.S. Midwest as we move forward through this next full week to 10 days. And without the ridge presence and the presence of widespread shower and thunderstorm activity, we are going to find ourselves in an environment that is quite favorable for crop development, and aggressive growth will likely occur. We will look for the temperatures to turn a little warmer over the next couple of days, but they will not rise above average anytime soon. The majority of the region will see temperatures that are mostly seasonable. That means daily highs here later this week, the weekend, and early part of next week will run mostly in the upper 70s through the 80s. There will be a few lower 90s in the far southwest, and there will be a few middle 70s that will occur in the upper parts of the Midwest. The low temperatures at night will be mostly 50s and 60s for a while here, but as we get into the weekend and start approaching that frontal boundary coming up and for the early part of next week, the nighttime lows will get a little warmer. We could see a few morning temperatures still in the 70s. Well, outside of the situation across the U.S. Midwest, I think most other areas in North America are still looking at favorable weather. There will be some timely showers in parts of Texas, cotton, sorghum, and corn country. There will also in portions of the lower delta in southeastern states. And we'll also expect some showers and thunderstorms in a part of the northern plains. These areas will also experience seasonable temperatures, reinforcing their production potential for 2014. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can sign up for our free Ag e-newsletter. Do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.